The number of layers that you need to be thinking about constantly is crazy. Orchestration, networking, do I add a service mesh? How do I run my database? What are the differences between the cloud providers, Kubernetes distributions? Oh, what's this K3S thing over here? There's just so much to think about. And it used to be so simple. You would throw up a VM, you would auto-scale it, and you would run your monolith. And I don't think we should go back to that by any means, but I think there's a new generation on the horizon that gives us some of the best of both.
Hello and welcome to Committing to Cloud Native, the podcast where we talk about the interface between open source and cloud native. We're super excited about our guest today. Can't wait to introduce him. Our panelists today are Justin Dorfman and Zuri Bar-Yohe, and they're going to have an awesome conversation. I really enjoyed listening to it, and I really hope you enjoy this conversation.
Hey, Connor, how are you?
Hey, doing well. How are you?
Great. Good to see you in the flesh. Because sometimes it's weird because when you meet someone on Twitter, it's like you've got this static image and now like you're alive, full color and everything. Yeah. I saw you post something, this thing called Suborbital. And before we go into that, I want Zuri to say hello. Zuri, say what's up.
Hey, Connor, how are you?
Doing great. How are you?
Thank you for coming on our podcast.
It's my pleasure.
So look, I got questions for days, but we only have 40 minutes, so let's get started. What is Suborbital? Tell the folks listening to this what it is, why we need it, how it is going to make cloud native better.
It's a family of open source projects, and each of them individually may not scream WebAssembly, but that is actually the main theme, is enabling WebAssembly specifically on the server side. And it's split up into a couple of different modules. So there's Vector, Grav, Reactor, Atmo. These are all different projects that when you put them together, they allow you to do some interesting things when building server-side technology.
Got it. So ever since I went into the cloud native space, all I hear about is WebAssembly, WASM, WASM, WASM. And I think what's interesting, actually, ZDNet did a story about it, the Bytecode Alliance. Are you part of the Bytecode Alliance, or is this project part of it?
I meet with them regularly, but I am not personally a member just yet. I think they actually just opened up for new members like this week. So I've been looking into doing that, but most of the members are companies and Suborbital is not a company. It's an open source project. So I've been talking with them quite a lot though, and I really love what they're doing.
Microsoft, Google, Intel, Mozilla, they want to move WebAssembly beyond the browser. What does that mean?
It was originally kind of designed as a technology to enable compiled languages other than JavaScript to be used in the web browser. And that was honestly still what most people associate it with. But in fact, WebAssembly is not specific to the web browser in any way. It was just the first thing that it was adopted in. WebAssembly at its core is a way of representing bytecode, compiled code. And where you run that, it's up to you. I mean, you can absolutely embed it in the browser and you can run it to, you know, power web applications, but there's a ton of other use cases for it. And the ones that I work with are made for developing cloud native server-side software, but there's others such as IoT devices, embedded applications, there's non-cloud native, non-browser things like desktop applications. So it's really whatever you can think of, there's probably some way of incorporating WebAssembly into it.
We could spend a day talking about WebAssembly, its greatness, and I hope we're going to do a lot around WebAssembly in this conversation. I mean, just mentioning the facts, we're talking about just strongly typed language that you can bind to any runtime application without recompiling, things of which consider nearly impossible or really hard to get done in previous static compiled languages. We can talk about the V8 role in this revolutionary in JavaScript, the Node.js, and WebAssembly following after that. And I would love, if you can, Connor, to take us through the history and the evolution and the revolution of this technology in the recent, I would say, what, 10 years is it around? A decade around us, more or less. But before that, Connor, I'd like myself and our audience to know you a little better. So if you can step back a little bit, tell us about your history. How did you get into computers, software, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, for sure. So I did a computer science degree in university, and I don't think that's so uncommon, but definitely not by any means needed anymore. That's just the way that I went. And right during school, I did a couple of internships. I worked for Airbus in their defense and space division. I worked for WordPress in their VIP division. And then my last year of school, I got an internship at 1Password. I was actually in the iOS team. I was building their iOS app. And after I graduated, I decided that iOS development wasn't for me. And so I wanted to try something else out. And just so happened that there was a prototype sitting in a Git repo somewhere of a command line tool for 1Password. And so I asked if I could pick that up and work with that. And they thankfully said I could. And so that kind of took my transition out of the, you know, mobile development space and into more of the automation and tooling space. And then from there, I started working more on the systems and backend side of things. I built a team around integrations, and now I lead a team called Product Discovery there, which is all about research and development and trying out new ideas. And then for the last year and a half or 2 years or so, I've been working on this idea of suborbital, and it started out as a functions as a service system for Docker. It was nice, but there was nothing truly special about it. There was nothing that Kubernetes, Docker, OpenFast couldn't already do. And so that's when I kind of took a pause and asked myself, like, what could I build in this space? Because it was a very interesting space to me, distributed computing, job processing, all that kind of stuff. I love thinking about those problems. And I was like, what could I build that would be unique and differentiate itself from everything else out there? And that's where WebAssembly kind of came onto the scene. I will say, like, I actually built server-side WebAssembly before I ever even built WebAssembly that runs in the browser, which I think is strange, but I never even bothered running WebAssembly in the browser. I just went right to the server-side runtimes because that's how my brain works these days, I think, in terms of distributed systems.
Well, don't get me wrong. I mean, the world will benefit more from you doing cloud native than mobile native apps. But as you mentioned that you decided iOS development is not for you, I wonder, what was it in iOS development? I mean, I never tried developing iOS application. I did so many, all sort of development platforms, but never did this one. What was in the process, in the technology, in the tooling, or that move you away from it?
It's none of those things, actually, believe it or not. I think Apple has some of the best software design and tooling available. I mean, Xcode has a little bit to be desired. At least it did when I was using it. I've heard it's gotten a little better since I last touched it, but it's none of those things that made me want to switch. It was actually the fact that I just had no desire to build user interfaces. That was a thing that wasn't working well for me. And it just became, you know, something that I lost interest in. And even to this day, like building web applications, like front-end development web application, it still doesn't really vibe with me. It's not something that I enjoy doing. It's very cool and it takes a lot of skill and it's something I respect highly, but it's definitely not my cup of tea.
So you would rather developers will use your API application program interface rather than users using your user interface?
I mean,
you prefer developers than end users. That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I love having developers as my users and my customers.
So that's interesting. The transition that a language that was mainly designed and was mainly targeting a browser makes its way eventually to the server side. I would say even more, far more popular, more common than actually in a browser. There are very few applications that we know of as an end user to actually make use of WebAssembly. But every existing server platform, every LLVM language will have its WebAssembly. Right. Is that a case?
You'll actually be surprised at how many front-end applications there are out there today using WebAssembly. It's definitely not totally saturated yet. There hasn't been a massive wave of people using it, but it's more than you, I think you would expect. You know, some recent ones that have come up is, for example, Figma, the very popular design application. Yep. They use that to help rendering. One of my favorites is the Internet Archive, using it to emulate Flash to be able to preserve old Flash games.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's quite cool. And a bunch of gaming applications as well that have come up in the last little while. But it's one of those things that you have no idea that you're interfacing with it, right? When it's running in the web browser, you have no idea that it's being used, but it's more popular than you might think.
And where is the suborbital come into the play when it comes to cloud native server-side distributed applications in WebAssembly?
Yeah, so there's two different ways that you can take advantage of suborbital's projects. There's what I call the do-it-yourself way, or there's what I call the batteries included way. And that's because the projects are organized to be a set of building blocks and then a platform built on those building blocks. So the three projects that I refer to as the building blocks are Grav, Reactor, and Vector. So Grav is what I call a distributed messaging mesh. So it's actually an abstraction over messaging protocols and discovery protocols that allow you to really easily write asynchronous code for communicating on the network. And then Vector is an HTTP framework for Go, not exactly consequential to WebAssembly, but it integrates really well with the rest of the suborbital ecosystem. And it's one of my like passion projects. So it's not for everyone. It's very opinionated, but I think it's great. And then there's Reactor, which is the core WebAssembly runtime. It's a function scheduler or a job scheduler that allows you to run either Go or WebAssembly workloads. Either one, they're completely interchangeable. And it provides the execution environment for WebAssembly, powered by the WASMer runtime under the hood. It allows you to run many WebAssembly modules all at once. It manages their memory, it manages inputs and outputs, and it provides APIs to the WebAssembly sandbox that developers can use to actually gain the capabilities that they need to write applications for the server. That's called the Runnable API, and it's something that I've been working on quite a lot lately. It's something you have to do to interact with that sandbox, because WebAssembly is deny by default, and it means that nothing can access the outside world unless you explicitly grant it the permission to do so. And so Reactor manages all of that on behalf of the developer, so you don't actually need to think about it. And then when you put those three together, those three building blocks together, they form Atmo. And Atmo is the batteries included version, if you will. It means that you don't actually need to set up a web server or TLS or any of the boilerplate that you would normally need to write when you're building a web service. You interact with it using what I call the directive, which is a declarative format for defining your web services. It lets you define the endpoints and the routes and all of the steps that you want the application to follow to handle those endpoints. And you do so by composing together functions that are compiled to WebAssembly. So a project for Atmo is a collection of functions written in various languages. We support Rust and Swift, and TypeScript / assembly script is coming like very soon. And so it'll build all of your functions to WebAssembly modules. It'll package them all up together with your directive and with a set of static files. And then Atmo will take that bundle and execute the application as you've described it in the directive without you needing to write any boilerplate code whatsoever. So there's a couple of different ways that you can approach it. And I think it's a nice mixture of control, if you want to go the do-it-yourself route and have full maximum control, or simplicity and go with the Atmo route and batteries included.
And all this is open source.
That's right.
So I saw on your website, you're currently not looking for sponsors. By the way, your websites are beautiful. They're so polished. Love them. But you're not looking for sponsors, donations, or patrons. How are you sustaining this? Like, what is going on? What's the plan here?
I work for 1Password. That's my job. I work on Suborbital in the evenings and weekends. It's my own time. It's something that I just love doing. That's something that I enjoy. And I've been working on it for almost 2 years now. So while it might seem that there's a lot there, it's been building up over a long period of time. So it's just really enjoyable for me. And I love interacting with other developers through open source. And it's just fascinating problems that I like to solve.
Have you considered submitting any of your projects to the CNCF?
Yeah, it's definitely something I've considered. Once WebAssembly as a whole kind of builds up a bit more steam and the user base grows a little bit, it's definitely something that I want to think about doing.
Are you doing all this work by yourself on your own? Are you collaborating with others? This sounds like a lot to achieve on a spare time.
Yeah, there's definitely some open source contributors that have come in and helped out, especially on the tooling side, the suborbital CLI called Subo. And with the Graph project and the Reactor project as well, I definitely have spent a lot of time on it myself. Contributors started coming on board maybe 6 months ago as the popularity of the project started to grow a little bit. It's a good chunk of it is me, but there's definitely other contributors as well.
How are you managing like your community? You just like have a Slack? Basically, Zuri and I started this podcast because we want to learn from other open source maintainers. So if we ask you questions that might seem basic, they kind of are because we're learning.
So community is something that I'm learning. It's somewhat new to me. I've done some community stuff through 1Password, through our command line tool, but I am putting a bit more of a concerted effort on it for Suborbital. And like we have a Discord, for example, that you can join. If you go to chat.suborbital.dev, it'll take you right there. And a fair amount of interaction honestly happens in Twitter. It's one of the most active places. Like I've been tinkering with some community analytics apps like Comscore and Orbit. And when you look at the graphs, like sure, GitHub is number one, but actually Twitter is even more active than Discord. And people love to, you know, retweet things, and that often lets you go a little bit viral on a particular day.
And then you're doing podcasts with the people that find you on Twitter.
Yeah. It's like that's actually pretty much how it's gone. I'll have a particular tweet that gets a bit of attention, and then somebody will reach out saying, hey, come show off what you're working on this YouTube show or this podcast. And I love doing them. They're so much fun.
Here's another question. So 1Password is your bread and butter. How are they using Cloud Native? Are they using any of your projects? Like what's going on here?
Yeah, there's a little bit of use of some of the suborbital building blocks. 1Password actually started out, however, I think it was well over a decade ago now. It was, you know, just a Mac app. And it's now grown to being, we have an app on every platform. And then in 2015, actually, literally the day I joined the company, they launched 1Password for Teams, which is the cloud product that we now just know as 1Password, because almost everybody uses the cloud offering now. And so we've built up quite a lot of experience running cloud native at 1Password. The entire service, 1Password.com, is a Go system that has treated us extraordinarily well. And we've been expanding more recently into integration. So you might have seen about 2 weeks ago, we launched 1Password Secrets Automation, which is an extension and an expansion of what 1Password normally does, which is the usernames and passwords and credit cards that you as a person use day to day. We've now expanded that to include infrastructure secrets, Kubernetes plugins, HashiCorp Vault plugin, all sorts of things to manage the secrets that machines and your business needs to run, and all sorts of different automations around that. So there's definitely been some expansion there, and there's been a bunch of lessons learned, because not only are we running cloud native software to power 1Password, but we're now also offering cloud native software to our customers to run. There's the 1Password Connect server that actually links 1Password into your infrastructure. There's the 1Password Skim Bridge that lets you connect with identity services like Okta. And the 1Password command line tool, which was kind of the way that I started out there. So there's plenty of different things that have come in the last couple of years that makes a lot of sense for 1Password.
I would have never known that.
I had no idea, and I'm glad to hear about it.
Me too.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
It literally launched on April 13th. So just a couple of weeks ago, it was a pretty great launch. Got quite a lot of attention, and we're pretty excited about it.
JD, we are too focused on our own products. We no longer pay attention to others.
Dude.
See what happened to us?
I'm like way too close to the fire. I need to get back and like see what else is going on.
Stay right where you are, man.
I don't get it. Are you competing with HashiCorp or you're working with HashiCorp? What's going on?
I don't understand. Absolutely not. We actually have a partnership with HashiCorp. What you can do now is you can actually, there's a plugin for HashiCorp Vault with 1Password Secrets Automation. So you can actually make your 1Password data available through HashiCorp Vault using their backend system.
Now, that's a smart idea because they are very ingrained into the cloud native landscape. Yeah. So hooking up with them, I think that's a brilliant move. I've been doing this podcast for well over 2 months or so. And half of the people that come on this podcast say cloud native is way too complicated, and little less than half that say it's easy. It's the most easiest thing in the world. So I know you have some feelings on complexity in the cloud native world. Talk to me and the audience about this.
So I definitely have thoughts here. And that's one of the main drivers when I'm building suborbital. I'm constantly thinking about the complexity needed to get this system up and running in production. And it's a double-edged sword like no other, where you have a massive amount of customization and options available to you in this space. But then that just flips around and becomes paralysis of like, what do I choose? Will making a certain decision ruin my system 5 years down the line if I choose wrong? And the number of layers that you need to be thinking about constantly is crazy. Orchestration, networking, do I add a service mesh? How do I run my database? What are the differences between the cloud providers, Kubernetes distributions? Oh, what's this K3S thing over here? There's just so much to think about. And it used to be so simple. You would throw up a VM, you would auto scale it, and you would run your monolith. And I don't think we should go back to that by any means, but I think there's a new generation on the horizon that gives us some of the best of both. And that's what I'm trying to do with Atmo. Atmo is designed to give you the best scaling properties of, you know, microservices and serverless while still keeping your code base and the architecture of your system simpler. And it's enabled by WebAssembly. That's the great thing. Because an Atmo application is split up into what could be dozens or even like hundreds of tiny WebAssembly modules that are all working in concert to solve the goals of your application, Atmo can distribute that execution among many instances or even across multiple layers of the network, like Edge, Central Cloud, even devices one day. I haven't quite gotten that far yet. But you can imagine where a system that can intelligently decide where to run the different pieces of compute that comprise your application. And that's something that I've been calling decomposed computing. That's not an official term or anything. That's just what I call it, where if your application is already naturally broken up into these tiny pieces, you as the operator or as the developer shouldn't need to care where those individual pieces are running, whether it's on an edge network in your AWS region or on a device somewhere, as long as it is achieving the business goals that you've described for it. And so my hope, and whether it's through Atmo or through something else, my hope is that we can get to this place where, quote unquote, the network tries to figure out more of this stuff for you. And a lot of the complexity that we see today gets abstracted down a level. And the developers and the operators who are dealing with this stuff every day don't need to care so much, and they can focus more on what actually brings value to the application.
So basically what you're saying is absorbing complexity and making it hard to screw up.
That's exactly right. It's something I really believe in. I think especially if you're building products and tools and services for developers, and I mean for everybody else, but developers is kind of what I focus on. Absorbing complexity where it makes sense is always the right call. Give them the knobs and levers that they need to customize and use the application the way that they need to use it, but do it in such a way that they can't accidentally break something. There should be no foot guns to be had anywhere in your system. There should be no combination of configuration options that causes them to get into a bad state, whether that's with performance or security or scalability. It should be really hard to screw it up so that they can focus on building what they need to make their application work.
That's like the AWS way. If an engineer screws up at AWS, they don't blame the engineer. They blame themselves for that happening. It shouldn't have happened. Right. So I totally get that.
Yeah. And if you deploy an Atmo application and something breaks or something behaves in a way that doesn't make sense, that's my fault. That's not your fault.
Exactly. Accountability.
Yes. Accountability in cloud native.
So just for me to better understand Atomo's, I would say, purpose and positioning, is it to replace existing web application framework development, or is it to empower existing ones? Is it extendable? Is it pluggable?
Yeah, that's a great question. So if you use Atomo on its own, it could very easily slot into an existing microservice system, for example, because it's just a web server. It's a web server powered by WebAssembly and a declarative format and all this fancy new fun stuff. But it is a web service. So you could slot it into an existing setup if you wanted to. If you wanted to...
Just for you to understand. So you actually implemented your own web server, or is it something that you're writing on? So like existing proxy or existing networking?
It's all based on Go's networking stack, and it provides all of the abstractions and all of the boilerplate that you shouldn't need to deal with. It handles all of that for you, but it does use the Go networking stack to power all of it.
Well, that's quite powerful and stable.
That's right. And I won't go off on too much of a tangent, but I do believe Go is the best thing to be using for cloud native right now. Of course, there's others. And of course, Rust is the fancy thing that everybody loves. But for building cloud native technology right now, I think Go is the best choice. But to go back to, you know, the question of how it fits in, you can kind of think of Atomo roughly in the same vein of Node.js, where Node.js is running JavaScript on the server. It includes some APIs to make use of hardware. It makes use of the networking protocols that you need to use. And it lets you run a technology that also just so happens to be traditionally used in the browser, lets you run it on the server. And so that's the comparison I like to make. And if you want to use that same WebAssembly runtime and power to extend existing applications, that's where those building blocks come in. If you want to add WebAssembly execution to an existing Go app, for example, you could use Reactor. If you want to add these network meshing capabilities to one of your existing applications, use Graph. And so it's kind of depends on what your goal is.
Well, this is fascinating. You're actually saying, if I hear it correctly, certain organizations already have code based running Go based platform. Now they can add more capabilities and diversity in terms of languages. They can write, say, a service in Rust, compile it into WebAssembly, and get Atomo to play along on top of the Go runtime, for example. So you can run, right? Is that correct, Ramsey? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So if you wanted to take some Rust code and run it as a standalone web service, Atomo is fantastic. But if you wanted to actually embed that Rust execution in an existing Go application, then you can use Reactor.
So can I use any language that is compiled to WebAssembly to write on Atomo, or only specific frameworks and specific languages apparently available?
Yeah, so that's a slightly tricky question because yes, it will run anything that compiles to WebAssembly. But if you want to be able to take advantage of the capabilities provided by the runnable API, you have to use one of the languages that we support currently.
Which are Rust, Go,
Swift, and AssemblyScript. Go will come shortly after AssemblyScript. Oh.
This is so cool, man. So cool. Getting it done on spare time. Kudos.
Yeah. It's so clean. Like you've been to the website. I just love design. I love talking about websites and how they look. So
I'll plug Unicorn Platform. It's a site builder that I really like. I'll take no credit for actually developing it. I just put the site together with the tools available from Unicorn.
Interesting. Wait, does it write Markdown and how does that work?
It's a static site builder. It's very much a GUI, kind of like a Webflow or something like that.
Oh, interesting. I'm going to check that out.
So do you know of users using Atomo in production at scale?
So I'm specifically not recommending for Atomo for production use quite yet, not because of stability problems, but because the API is changing very rapidly still. And I can't expect anybody to build their entire big system on Atomo when I'm going to be kind of pulling the rug out from under them every couple of months. I'm hoping that will change fairly soon. I'm hoping by Atomo beta 5 or so, the API will have stabilized to the point where I can start recommending it for production use. We're on beta 2 right now, and beta 3 is right around the corner. However, the building blocks, they are quite stable, and I would recommend those for production use. I do know of a couple of startups and a couple of companies that are using Reactor, for example, to build custom functionality and run WebAssembly. nothing for Atmo yet because I've been specifically telling people, try it out. Please give me all the feedback that you can. And people have built small hobby applications and some side projects with it. But I'm explicitly saying that it's not quite ready for production use yet.
Can you tell us a little bit about server-side technology for running and executing WebAssemblies? Because I know like Envoy has WebAssembly support for plugins for HTTP filters. What are the available server-side technologies to plug in and to integrate with WebAssembly modules or WebAssembly code?
Yeah, for sure. There's actually quite an interesting landscape right now. So it ranges all the way from like the low-level runtimes. So think WASM time, which is run by the Bytecode Alliance. There's WASMer. And there are some other runtimes like WAVM and Second State SSVM. These are kind of the lowest level execution engines. And then as you build your way up to like the more high level abstractions, and that's kind of where Atmo lives, at the high level abstraction kind of application layer. Things in the middle include things like the Crosslet project from Microsoft, which is actually allowing you to schedule WebAssembly using the Kubernetes API, which is really quite fascinating. And then you've got other frameworks that are kind of in the same vein as Atmo, like WASM Cloud and Lunatic. These are other open source projects that are trying to accomplish some of the same goals using WebAssembly. And then if you go kind of even further past that, there are some cloud providers and some actually hosted solutions that let you run WebAssembly. That includes Fastly's Compute at Edge platform and the Cloudflare Workers platform as well.
I believe those are actually using V8. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. I think so. Fastly's platform is using WASM Time and Lucet because Fastly was one of the founding members of the Bytecode Alliance, but Cloudflare Workers is indeed using V8. And actually, most recently, the Deno project released support for WebAssembly in one of their fairly recent versions, and their new cloud product is also going to be having WebAssembly support.
Yeah, indeed. It looks like a promising landscape and promising technology.
Yeah. Yeah. Deno is awesome.
The plethora of knowledge you hold around WASM it's WASM. It's crazy. It's awesome.
I'll say one thing is that I'm not a compiler developer. I actually don't know a whole lot about compilers and the low level specifications and all that stuff. I know a lot of people working on those things. I know people at the Bytecode Alliance and who are in the WebAssembly working group, WebAssembly community group. Compilers aren't my thing. I work at a higher level, like a higher level of abstraction than that. The work that they are doing in the compiler space to support WebAssembly, especially across multiple languages, is quite impressive. And I would definitely suggest checking out talks from like the WebAssembly Summit, the recent WebAssembly Live event, and the upcoming Cloud Native WebAssembly Day at KubeCon EU.
Are you attending that?
I am giving a lightning talk at WASM Day.
That's cool, man. I was going to ask if you were going to, I'm glad it came up because I would have probably forgot, but in my notes, I was going to say, bring up KubeCon, and here it is. And are you representing 1Password or are you representing your open source?
I am a developer from 1Password, and it's part of my career, part of my title and all of those things. But the talk is about suborbital. So why don't I say both?
Are they like sponsoring that event or is it suborbital?
No, 1Password isn't sponsoring that event, but they do participate in lots of events. For example, GopherCon is one that 1Password sponsors year after year. Actually, a couple of years ago, we were the diamond sponsor. We were like the marquee sponsors at GopherCon a couple of years ago, which was really fun. But yeah, not this particular event.
By the way, guys, 1Password is the name of a brand of a company. So make sure you will never use the same 1Password across all your websites.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Password management is very important.
Yeah, good point.
I think this is where they got their name from, right?
Yeah, well, so 1Password.
Because people used to have like 1Password for everything. And they said, no, let us take care of it.
That's right. That's right. The master password is what they refer to. 1Password, the name is, it's you use your master password to unlock the application. And then it stores, generates, and manages completely unique and strong passwords for every different website
you use. What if you forgot your master password and you forgot the model of the first car your father had on 1974? So, what are you going to do then?
Yeah. So we have something called recovery that allows one of your family members in your family account to recover you if you forget your master password, or if you're part of a business or a team, then you're the administrators of your business can recover your account. Since everything is end-to-end encrypted, we actually could not unlock your account even if we wanted to, because the cryptography happens right on your device and we never hold the keys for that. So signing up for a family account and getting a couple of members of your family on board is always a good idea.
Make sure you keep good relations with your family members.
Yeah. Don't get in a fight and then like be like, oh shoot.
So Kana, where did you get these cool names, Suborbito?
Yeah, it's pretty badass.
Oh, yeah. I'm a big spaceflight nerd. I love watching rocket launches and I follow all that stuff very closely. So that was kind of the inspiration for it. But the main reason why I chose this name in particular is that the GitHub username was available.
That's all that matters at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's right.
Is the domain available? Can you get the username on all major platforms? Yeah,
right.
That's all that matters.
And what about Atomo? Is it playing with the Atom or something else?
Yeah. So Atmo is actually playing on the word atmosphere. So when, you know, something is coming into, you know, the Earth's atmosphere, they say entering Atmo kind of thing. All of the projects have a bit of a spaceflight theme to them. It's something that I just a little bit of joy for myself as I give them cool nerdy names.
And you're using Orbit for community management.
Yeah. I've been playing around with that platform too. And it's a fun little coincidence there. Yeah, Orbit's great. There's a bunch of products coming up in this space. Like I've been looking at ComSOAR as well. And there's some other ones that I haven't even had a chance to try yet. But community management and community analytics is a big trend these days that I've been seeing. And I'm really happy about it, especially because it kind of coincides with me trying to build a community. So I've got a lot of brand new fancy tools at my disposal to try and, you know, build this well.
Yeah, I got to definitely get on Orbit. It's on my to-do list. It's just been pretty busy here. Pretty busy.
Yeah. And I recently actually got to meet Patrick, one of the founders of Orbit.
Patrick Woods.
Really nice guy. Yeah, exactly.
Yep. He's my boy. We hang out.
Yeah. Nice.
Him and Josh. Josh is a co-founder. Really great team. Love them. So, so good.
Yeah. And then Mac and the team over at ComSOAR have also been doing really great work. They got an investment from like Alexis Ohanian, 776. Like there's a big upswell of community tooling coming up these days.
If I recall correctly, Firebase Cloud Function, like about 2 years ago or so, they announced support for WebAssembly. I'm talking about Cloud Firebase, Google Firebase.
Oh,
Cloud Function.
I'm not even sure I've seen that one.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking, how about for developers, it's an idea, if you have a Firebase operation, and it's very popular in the mobile space, right? Mm-hmm. Take Atomo as an option, or at least if a developer would like to explore, right, how to integrate Atomo in their operating platform.
Yeah.
They could probably consider, I'm just trying to think for myself, which of running platforms that I'm in charge with, we can experiment with it.
Right.
That might be a great. If you consider actually integrating with Cloud Functions, Lambda World, and making it easier for like serverless and all those streams, writing on those?
Yeah, so it's an interesting question because there's actually a project called Assembly Lift run by somebody I know well, Dan. That project is specifically designed around running WebAssembly in AWS Lambda. And so there are projects specifically designed for that. I am myself not targeting the existing serverless platforms because I don't agree, not like it's not something that I vehemently oppose, but I don't work well with the model of current serverless. It doesn't feel ergonomic to me the way that you have to organize projects and organize your code and the way that it's deployed and the way that it's so tightly coupled to the vendors that provide them. It's not true for all of them. There's things like Knative that are Kubernetes based and stuff like that. But I don't enjoy building on the current generation of serverless, hosted serverless platforms. And that's why Atmo is function based. So it takes some of the parts that I do like about designing code for it, but it's not like the serverless, the way that you think about it with Lambda, where it is designed to be abstracted away from you. You don't have to care about how it's running and it's designed to manage itself, but it's not the current style of serverless. So I would consider Atmo a pseudo serverless platform. It's not quite serverless, but it's not serverless. And I think it lends itself, like the main differentiator for me is, how do you organize your project? How you as a developer, how are you fitting all of the pieces together? And with current serverless, there's just so much like popsicles and glue sticks that you have to use to, you know, thread logic through the different AWS or Google products to make everything work the way you want. And that's just not how my brain works. That's not how I like to build systems. And they've done some really amazing things on the technology side. It's just the ergonomics of it is not the way I like to work. So that's why Atmo is slightly different. And yeah, I would like Atmo to be able to replace Lambda in some senses. Like it could be the platform that you build on top of instead of Lambda. It doesn't mean it can't interoperate with Lambda, especially like with something like AssemblyLift. You could build code that runs both on Atmo and on AssemblyLift and have them work together. There's no reason you can't do that. It's just not something that I feel like I need to be working on right now.
Anything else we want to cover?
I mean, from my end, I would just love to get feedback on the suborbital projects, the documentation, the tooling, the experience of building an application. These are all things that I care very much about. So if you want to join the suborbital Discord or file issues in the GitHub repos or join the GitHub discussions in our meta repo, these are all places that you can reach me. And I'd love to hear anyone's thoughts about the tools and the frameworks.
So it's suborbital.dev and it's github.com/suborbital, right? And Twitter handle is suborbital.
That's right. Yeah. And if you go to chat.suborbital.dev, it'll take you right to our Discord server.
That's smart. Or redirect.
Well, we have learned a lot today, Connor. Gotta tell you.
We have. I've never seen someone so excited about WASM. I hear people talk about it, but like you like are a great brand advocate for WASM. And I'm really excited that you came on the show because, you know, that since I've been in this cloud native space for 4 months or so, WebAssembly is, but next to Rust is probably the hottest like buzzword there is. So yeah, it's cool to see that it's not just a buzzword and it's being applied at companies like 1Password. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
There are so many smart people working on these problems right now. And I really believe like WebAssembly is going to be one of the killer technologies of the 2020s.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, once I found out that Figma ran on WebAssembly, I was like, oh, I get why WebAssembly is so good. But I never even thought that it was going to be used as a backend, it's server side at all. But
yeah. And if there's one kind of idea that I could leave off with is that I'm hoping a couple of years from now, WebAssembly will just be an implementation detail. I don't want WebAssembly to be the headline feature on my website in 3 years. I want it to be a footnote. I want it to be able to take advantage of all the great properties that it gives us, the security and the portability and the performance that it gives us. But it should be an implementation detail. You shouldn't need to care in a couple of years.
So you mean suborbital on its own, regardless of the actual under the hood languages and all those details?
Yeah, you should be using Atmo because of the systems that it lets you build and design, not because it's a WebAssembly platform.
The security, simplicity, and all those benefits.
That's right. Exactly.
Well, Connor, I wish you will actually get to a day in which you spend most vast majority of your time on this great project without interfering with your career at 1Password. Maybe they would love to have you on both. I don't know. But it seems like great potential, great project, and
thank you very
great
much.
Traction.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Listeners, I hope you enjoyed this one. Do tune in next time. We're really excited about our lineup of guests. We have a super exciting guest next week. As well, check out the show notes for this podcast at podcast.curiefence.io. That's CURIEFENSE, podcast.curiefence.io for the Commuting to Cloud Native podcast. Thanks again for listening. Tune in next week. Catch you later.